the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Well, we all know that we like to retire someday, and one of the tools we use for retirement is putting money away in a retirement plan. It could be something simple like an IRA or a 401k at work. But for those individuals who are self-employed, there are also special pension plans that can help you not only save on taxes and get a deduction up front, but also save for that inevitable day when you want to retire. Joining me on the program is Lowell Smith. He's Chief Operating Officer of IRA Logics. And Lowell, before we get into some real specifics, let's talk about the difference usually between a person that is self-employed and somebody that works either for the government or a private corporation or a nonprofit organization. There's different kind of pension plans. We call them 401k. In the private sector, they're called 403b. If you work for a public school, if you're in government, we call them 457. Let's talk about the difference between those three and then talk about, as a businessman, what's the available options.
Sure. A 401k plan can be used for an individual, and we'll get into that when we're talking about smaller business plans. But those are different, typically for for-profit organizations. They could also be used in for not-for-profits that are also eligible for 403bs. But essentially in those situations, and in all those plans that you mentioned, the primary funding vehicle is the employee contribution. It's a pre-tax contribution, typically, but a 401k plan can also be an after-tax Roth contribution. There are limits on those corporation plans on how much you can contribute. So in 2017, for all those types of plans, an individual can put $18,000 away pre-tax. If they're under 50, if they're over 50, they can put another $6,000 away. So for a total of $24,000. In some instances, also, those organizations that sponsor them, whether they be a government organization or a not-for-profit organization of some sort, will have a matching contribution. And that matching contribution is really up to the discretion of the organization that puts that into place. 457s, though, do not have matching contributions. Typically, they're just a payroll deduction-only program.
Are these plans pretty much uniform these days, whether it's 457, 403B, or 401? Have they equalized all of those now, $18,000, $6,000 extra if you're over age 50?
They have. There are still some special catch-up provisions for 457 and 403B plans when you're nearing retirement. But for the most part, the average person who's making contributions is limited to the same, they call them 415 limits, but it's that same $18,000 a year plus, if they're over 50, the extra six.
All right. So we have the typical plans, the 401ks, the 403bs. Let's talk about some of the other plans that are available for individuals. And I want to take a look at three different kind of situations, Lowell. An individual who, for example, maybe is a sole proprietor. He's a single individual, somebody that is in a partnership, or somebody that has a larger company. What are the kind of plans that can help shelter income and put away money? And in many cases, it's my understanding that these plans offer larger contributions for the owners.
Correct. And you've kind of put in the three different scenarios, and those make a big difference in how you're trying to decide what plan's right for your organization. If you're just an individual and you're just looking to make the best contribution or the most contributions available for you, that's a little simpler a solution because you're only looking out for yourself. So you're not having to fund other employees in order to make extra contributions for yourself. So in that case, let's go to that sole proprietor. Typically, what they're going to use is one of three different programs. They could use, if they wanted something just inexpensive, easy to implement, has very little compliance work involved in it, you'd do something which is called a SEP IRA. Essentially, a SEP IRA is a profit sharing plan that allows you to put up to 25% of your earnings into the plan every year. Up to this year, the most you can put in is $54,000. So if you make up to $270,000 a year, you can put $54,000 into that SEP IRA. It sits in an IRA just like a traditional IRA. It actually is a traditional IRA. It just allows a little higher contribution limit. And whatever you invest in, it grows. That is probably the simplest option available to that person who's self-employed. The second option that can get you a little bit more of a contribution is what's called an individual 401k, or they call it a solo K in many situations. In that situation, because you're doing a pre-tax contribution, you can do a pre-tax contribution, or even if you do an after-tax contribution, works better with the pre-tax, I can make my $54,000 between the combination of my deferral of salary and the profit sharing, but I also can do an extra $6,000 if I'm over 50. So if you're over 50 and you have the income, you're making over $270,000 a year, you can do an extra $6,000 in a solo K. It is a little bit more expensive to implement a solo K. You're going to need a firm that's going to charge you, I would say, between $350 and $600 a year to kind of set that up and administer it for you. But it's not a very expensive proposition for a 401k. The other option that you have, which isn't known about that often for the individual, it works very well, is called a defined benefit plan. Particularly if you're getting close to retirement age, maybe within 10 years of retirement, you can shelter even more of your earnings than the $60,000 often, especially if you're making a good amount of money, into a defined benefit plan. The reason you can do that is the defined benefit plan has to be funded in order to pay you a benefit. And I think the maximum benefit in 2017 that can be paid out of a defined benefit plan is $215,000 a year. That's a lot of money. In order to pay that and have that ongoing, you've got to fund it and have that money be able to grow and keep paying that benefit over time. So because of those rules, often individuals can form a defined benefit plan, put in well over $60,000 and take that off your income and also have that grow for retirement. In that situation, you're going to need an actuary or consulting firm to help you set that plan up. That's a little bit more expensive, obviously, because there's some consulting involved in the setup. Once it's set up, it's not as bad, but it's still a lot more expensive than an individual K. But again, you've got that advantage of being able to put a lot more away for retirement.
One of the issues about the defined benefit, it's my understanding, it has to be funded each year. And sometimes businesses can be cyclical where one year, I mean, think of the real estate industry or the mortgage industry that does well when times are booming. Then the economy slows down, maybe goes into a recession, and profits and sales go down. So there's less profits to put away. Let's talk about flexibility for the owner that allows the owner to put the maximum contribution in a year they're doing well, but doesn't have, let's say, some of the complications or the stress of needing to fund something when times are not as well.
Yeah, and Jimmy, you make a very good point. And you're right. With that defined benefit plan, you do have funding rules that do apply typically in order, and you will have to make some contributions every year. Whereas in the other two types of plans that we talked about, which was that SEP IRA or that solo K, you know, it is very flexible. Essentially, the SEP IRA is a profit sharing. You don't have to make that contribution every year. You just make whatever percentage contribution you want to that year. Similarly, with that individual K, you can defer as much or as little of your income into that program as possible. There's a lot more flexibility in those two programs than a defined benefit plan. Both of them, the individual solo K and SEP, are just as equally flexible. The one difference is that because the solo K is a qualified plan under the tax code, you can't just do it once. They kind of require that you make contributions periodically in order to keep that alive. But most people do make some contributions every year, just the amount would vary.
Now, Lo, what about, let's take this 401k solo plan. Okay, that's for a single individual. Let's take a situation where basically, the individual goes from a sole proprietor, the business starts to grow. Now he starts adding three or four more employees. What happens then? Is the same amount that he has to put for himself or herself, is the same amount that has to be put aside for the employees?
Yes, for the most part. Let's go to when you start adding employees. Now we're going to add some additional plans into the mix, right? You don't have a solo K option anymore. Now you're in an actual 401k plan because there's more than one employee. You could still do a SEP. The only problem with doing a SEP is, let's say that you wanted to max out your contribution and you wanted to put 25% in. You have to put 25% in for everybody. That creates obviously some issues and it gets fairly expensive for the employer. You also now are introducing something called a simple IRA. So a simple IRA works pretty well for those firms that are fairly new, not growing really rapidly. They're available to organizations that have fewer than 100 employees. And in that situation, there is a match requirement, and the contribution limits are slightly different for a simple IRA. The max you can contribute in a simple IRA is $12,500 a year. And the catch-up contribution, which is that amount that you can contribute if you're over 50, is $3,000. It's half of what you can do in a 401k plan. So you've got $5,500 less that you can defer for if you're under 50, and an extra $3,000 less that you can defer. So you can only get a maximum of $15,500 in a simple IRA. Now, the advantages of that program are that, again, administratively, it's very inexpensive to run. You don't have ERISA requirements that often require someone professional to help you run your plan. It's in an individual IRA account controlled by that employee. It's a lot simpler program to option. But if I'm an employer who's trying to maximize as much as I can put in, that's probably not my best option. If I'm a startup plan and my maximization, or I'm a small employer and maximizing my individual contributions isn't really all that important to me, the simple IRA is a fairly inexpensive way to go. But there is a match requirement. You do have to match either dollar for dollar up to the first 3%, or you do what is called a non-elective contribution, and you can give that to everyone who is eligible, whether they contribute or not. And that would have to be 2%. And that amount in 3 out of 5 years can drop down to a match of 1%, either the combination of, in 2 out of every 5 years, the combination of the 3% mandatory match or the non-elective. You only have to do one or the other 3 out of 5 years and can drop the contribution, the matching down to 1%. Most people don't do that. And the eligibility, as long as they've made a certain amount of money every year, they would have to be eligible after 2 years of employment with you. So you don't have vesting also that sometimes applies to other 401k plans. But it's a good option for small plans. If I've also could put in what is called a safe harbor 401k plan for a small employer. I mean, why would I do that? Well, if I have a 401k plan with multiple employees, there's things called compliance testing that limit the amount that a highly compensated person, you typically the owner and officers in the corporation, can contribute based on what the non-highly compensated employees do. So if the non-highly compensated employees aren't contributing very much, it's hard to get my maximum contribution, which again could be $18,000 a year plus $6,000 for over 50 in deferrals, and then whatever that match would be. It's hard to do that because of the compliance testing. If I have a simple 401k plan, I do have to have a match of dollar for dollar up to 3% and at least a 50 cent on a dollar match on the next 2%, so a total potential match of 4%. If I do that, there aren't any compliance testing that limits what an owner or another highly compensated employee can put in. Now, it does get difficult to get to that $54,000 that I talked to you about. You can't get through it by just your deferrals and a match. If you want to do that, you have to put in a profit sharing component, which would be obviously spread out to other employees. So you can get a lot more contributions than that than you can into a simple IRA. But again, there would be a profit sharing component. And I'll talk a little bit on the profit sharing component after I finish up with the last piece that I would talk about with about these small plans is just a regular 401k plan. So if I did a regular 401k plan that wasn't a simple 401k plan, I could still, again, have a contribution limit of $18,000 plus $6,000 if I'm over 50. I could also have, if I made a match of any site, I wouldn't have to match as much. I don't have to match at all. But if I don't match, people are less likely to contribute who aren't highly compensated employees. But let's say I only want to match 2%. I could do that, and I could actually put a vesting schedule on my employer contributions, meaning that, you know, you'd have to work there a certain amount of years in order to get ownership of all that money that was made as a contribution by the employer as a match. All of those plans have advantages and disadvantages. Typically, small employers, if they can afford a match, they're better off with that safe harbor so that the owners and the highly compensated can put away at least as much as they want. Now, the last component in that is something called the profit sharing component. All 401k plans are profit sharing plans by nature. Just 401k allows that employee deferral. I can make a profit sharing contribution, but I have to do it in what's called a non-discriminatory way. So let's say that one basic way that it could be non-discriminatory is I give everybody $1,000. That's equal. That can be done. Most people do it by percentage. So I'm going to give, let's say I have $100,000 that they're available for profit sharing. And, you know, I've got 10 employees. And what I do is I just take their salaries as a percentage of total salaries. And I apply that same percentage to that contribution. Or I could just match, give everybody a 5% contribution. In that situation, I've passed my non-discriminatory rules. I can get more into my own account. I can put vesting schedules on that profit sharing component. And those are somewhat attractive. There is, and it's a little bit more expensive to administer, but there are also these things called new comparability, or I could even do integration with Social Security. In those situations, through special testing rules and special allowances by testing on the government, for particularly for older employees for that Social Security integration, or for highly compensated, I can make a slightly higher contribution percentage to certain groups, and it helps me pass. But that requires, again, usually a consultant or an actuary to help you design a program that allows that profit sharing component to benefit those owners and older employees and more highly compensated employees a little bit more than the general population.
Well, let's talk about, for our listeners, something that's really important, because if you take the average tax return, the first two pages, the first page is where you end up with adjusted gross income. And that's a very important figure when it comes to computing deductions. Talk about, if you would, for a minute, the importance of these pension contributions are what we call deductions above the line, and how that also helps the individuals save when it comes to itemized deductions and other forms of taxation that come in based on adjusted gross income.
Correct. Now, most of the plans we've talked about, when I've got my basic income, and let's assume I've got employees, for example, the amount that I now contribute to my 401k plan or my 457 plan or my simple IRA, that amount reduces your taxable income. So assuming you put it in a pre-tax deferral, if you don't, if you use a Roth, if you contribute into a Roth source, again, that doesn't really have any effect on your taxable income, but that amount goes tax-free, not tax-deferred, as you do with a pre-tax contribution. But it can significantly lower the amount you're paying in taxes. If I'm self-employed and I'm also making those contributions, it's also lowering the amount of my taxes, because I'm also taking, just similar to an individual, the amount that the employer contributes to his own pension and to any of his employees reduces the income of the corporation and essentially the income of the individual. So 401k contributions, and also even to make contributions to employees to help lower the tax rate of that company, or even if it's a sole proprietorship of that individual.
So basically, as we're talking about these different plans, if you are self-employed, let's say you're an individual, you could be in a partnership, or maybe your firm gets larger. Let's talk about business entity forms. And is there anything that changes these plans? In other words, let's say I start out as a sole proprietor. Then maybe I take on a partner. Then the business grows and we decide to go from a simple mom and pop operation to a partnership to eventually a corporation. What happens to those plans as the business expands and as the entity itself, its legal ownership changes?
That's a good question. Depending on the type of plan, you can keep that plan or terminate it and start a new one. But let's say that you were in a SEP. As you go up, the SEP probably isn't going to work for you. So I'm going to move to something else. I'm going to move to probably a 401k of some sort, whether it be that safe harbor that I talked about that allow, you know, has a mandatory match, no vesting, and allows the higher the comps to put away a little bit more, or just a regular 401k plan. Based on the entity I am, the tax breaks are, how you take them may vary, but the tax ramifications are basically the same. As I grow up, however, I may want to keep changing that plan. I want to put in something like loans. I may want to change the vesting schedule, those type of things. As I change entities, I can just amend my plan document. I can restate it. I can make some changes to it to help it grow with me, particularly if I'm in a 401k environment. You don't really have to terminate that plan. You can just amend it. And then the benefits that somebody had before would stay with them. They would then accrue any future benefits based on the new plan. A lot of people, because that's kind of confusing, may terminate the old plan, allow people to roll money into the new plan. But each situation is different. It really does depend. If I get to a C corp, though, and I'm starting to get towards that 100 employee range, and or even over 50, in that situation, I'm going to have a little bit more complicated plan. I'm probably going to hire advisors to do advice on the plan, to help pick investments, to help me manage the ERISA requirements, ERISA being the law that governs the fiduciary rules under a retirement plan. I'm going to probably get into hiring somebody who's a benefit administrator to help administer that plan. So it's not so much the plan structure changes, but the way I'm running it, now I've got to be more responsible. I'm a fiduciary. I've got to do things like have quarterly meetings to review the plan documents. I'm going to put an investment policy statement into place. Usually you're going to hire someone who does that for a living, whether it be an investment advisor who's pretty good at it, or maybe a record keeper that's keeping the records for that 401k plan, or maybe both of those are helping you manage that plan and keeping in compliance with the law, and also administering things like loans and hardship withdrawals and those other things that are more typically present as an employer grows.
So basically, as you're describing this, Lo, if you are self-employed, whether you're a sole proprietor, partnership, or eventually a corporation, there is a lot more flexibility in terms of the kind of plans you can put in place that can help you shelter income, save you on not only taxes, but also help with itemized deductions as you lower adjusted gross income. But the most important thing is you can design flexibility to fit you personally, your ability to save, and the attributes of the business and the way it functions.
Correct. And that's why it's actually a fairly good idea to, particularly any time you're going to create any benefit program for yourself, go to somebody who really specializes in that kind of work to help you do it, whether it be an investment advisor or whether it be a consultant or maybe your accountant that will help you set these things up and determine what the best program is for you, and then review that every year and see, hey, is there something I might want to do different? Do I need to change the structure to better fit my organization?
Well, this is really great because we talk about tax planning here and the importance of above-line deductions are becoming so much more important because they really affect so many ways in which you could be subject to other forms of tax, whether it's the Obamacare tax, investment tax, or phasing out of itemized deductions and exemptions. Lowell, if somebody wanted to contact you regarding the expertise your firm has, how could they do so?
They can always go to www.iralogix.com. And we do a lot of work. We're primarily working in the IRA world. We help organizations create and manage IRA programs, whether they be advisors, banks, record keepers, other financial institutions that want to have their own program but don't have the capability to run it on their own systems. We develop the systems and run the programs for them.
Well, listen, Lo, I want to thank you for joining us on Lifetime Income. Very great, valuable advice. And I hope our listeners, if you're self-employed, will realize all the opportunities you have to put away money for retirement and save taxes at the same time. I look at it this way, Lo, the money you save in taxes is another way the government, in many ways, is subsidizing your own retirement. Lo, thanks for joining us on the program.
Oh, you're welcome, Adam. Thank you very much.
Well, that concludes my interview with Lowell Smith from IRA Logix, and I hope that you pick up a number of things there. Number one, there are various plans out there that are actually legal. The government put this in place for you to benefit from them so you can put away money for your own retirement, especially those of you who are self-employed, starting a business, or may have several employees or partners. And so there's all kinds of flexibility you can design, and it's a great way to not only reduce your income taxes up front, but also allow that money to accumulate tax deferred until such time you would like to withdraw it at the time you retire. I'm Jim Poplava. Thanks for listening.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.